Remember, we have been looking at God's providence in American history and God's involvement in American history. And we know that God is involved in human affairs. He's watching over his creation. He watches with wisdom and care. And sometimes he intervenes, and maybe many times he intervenes. I guess we'll know more when we get to heaven, the times that God intervened and we didn't even know it. And a famous Christian historian said this, and I think it's a great couple sentences. He said, "Christians need to remember that God is intervening and ordering the affairs of men and nations for his benevolent purpose. To the believer, the amazing coincidence of history are but manifestations of God's divine intervention for his omniscient and benevolent purposes." And what a great quote, and something to remember as right now, as in this venue, we look at American history. And if you remember, and you may not, but last time we talked about this, we were talking about America's second war for independence, a war that is almost forgotten about. But about 30 years after our war for independence, Britain again was really trying to maybe punish the colonies. I'm not sure what their end game was, but they people felt that they wanted to recapture and regain those colonies that they had lost. America's a nation now for 30 years, and so Britain, this is not a rusty army. They had just defeated Napoleon in Europe, and they turned their massive armies and navies to the United States, and intent on punishing and humiliating the American colonies. And we talked about last time that war began in 1812. There were many battles, just like the American Revolution. The American armies did not fare well in the beginning of that war. And then Britain had this three-pronged attack, and they were going to attack Washington, D.C., the capital of the nation, the newly formed capital of the nation, and then they would turn north and attack its cities in the north, perhaps invade through Canada. That was another thought. And then they would turn south and wipe out the southern colonies. And so, that if you remember, what we talked about last time was their attack on Washington, D.C., and how they literally burned every building in the newly formed capital down. The exception of the White House was not burned to the ground, but it was completely destroyed on the inside. And how that God moved in before they could really wipe out the entire capital and then move in and take the capital. God intervened in a storm that many said at the time, winds of hurricane strength. And they came in, they threw the British cannons in the air, they put out the fires, the storm and the rain that the British had started, many of the roofing material coming down on the soldiers, killing more British soldiers than the Americans had done in the battles before. And the British ran back to the harbor. Many of those ships were pushed back out of the sea, if you remember, and God just intervened and saved America at that point. That, to the British, was the main thrust of their attack. Well, now a few weeks has gone by, and you remember the British, this is arguably the largest navy of warships that the world had ever seen, what Britain had put together. And so this is not an army to be trifled with. And again, battle-hardened soldiers and sailors. And the British decided they would go north, just north of Washington, and attack Baltimore. And the British were intent, again, on decimating the cities of the new nation, taking back what they believed was theirs. So they sailed north of Washington, and they were going to attack a fort that protected Baltimore, Fort McHenry, in the Baltimore Harbor there. At this point in the war, we have a little bit of a lull. The United States government and the British had negotiated a prisoner exchange. And the American government sent a young lawyer named Francis Key to personally negotiate the release of the American prisoners. And so he sailed out to the British warship that held the prisoners. It was waiting there in the Baltimore Harbor. And after about a week, and they were just taking their sweet time. At the time, they didn't know why, but British were just dragging their feet. And these negotiations went on for day after day. A week passes. And finally, Key successfully negotiates the exchange. And as he left the British ship to go back to his ship, the admiral pulled him aside. And the British admiral, and he said, "There is a small wrinkle in the plan." And he would honor the negotiations, but it really was academic, as the British were going to destroy Fort McHenry and end the war that night. And Fort McHenry, again, is a strategic fort. This is a modern-day picture of Fort McHenry, and you can see the city of Baltimore there behind it. But the commander in charge of the fort, he had ordered a huge 30-by-40-foot flag that he, in defiance, was flying just so the British wouldn't be sure to miss it. And it was a huge flag that he flew there from the fort, and 1,000 men were in that fort to defend it. And so the British admiral, he said, I guess Francis Key was kind of in disbelief. He said, "Well, how are you going to do that?" And the admiral said, I want you to look out into the sea. And he gave him some binoculars. He looked out, and what Francis Scott Key saw was dozens of British warships sailing into the harbor. And this is now evident why the British were dragging their feet for a week. They were waiting for those ships to get there. And so this is a critical point in our nation's history, as America had won its independence 30 years before, but Britain had never really gone away, as I said. It had been a pest and had tried to meddle in American affairs, and they were determined to take back the states. So the admiral told him that he had notified the American government that unless they surrendered and lowered that huge flag that flew over the fort, they would destroy the remaining army with the fort and essentially end the war. In any event, the prisoner exchange was academic because the prisoners would be free to go home after the war ended. So Key went below to talk to the prisoners, who knew that there was a prisoner exchange, but he told them what had happened. And as they huddled there, the shelling began on the morning of September 13th. And history says the men began praying as the battle started, and praying that God would deliver the fort and the newly formed United States. Key later wrote that the bombing of the fort was really short of unbelievable. Dozens of warships, part of the greatest naval force the world had ever seen, as I said, they unleashed thousands of cannon shells and bombs and bombarded the fort for 24 hours. Key reported different times through the night to the prisoners who were, intent on were they going to live through this, and were they, what was going on? Was the fort still there? Had the flag come down? And as dawn broke on the morning of September 14th, 1814, the shelling stopped. An amazing sight appeared through the fog. The fort was terribly damaged. The flag was shredded. The flagpole was tilted at an odd angle, but the flag was still flying. And later, a few weeks later, Key wrote the words that millions have sung and memorized for over 200 years. He wrote in the first verse, he said, "Oh, say, can you see through the dawn's early light?" He went on to say, "The raucous red glare of the bombs bursting in air gave proof to the night that the flag was still there." And he then went ashore to the fort and he found that the gigantic flagpole had been hit many times, time after time. Dozens of men and boys had kept it in place to keep the flag from coming down. They determined that no matter what, they would never surrender the fort. And God had provided a great miracle in protecting the fort and really protecting the country from the overwhelming British bombardment. Well, Francis Key wrote four verses to that song, and I think the most important verse is the fourth verse. And I think you'll see what I mean here in a minute. I want to show you the words just quickly. And are we okay with the... Okay. And I'm going to play, actually, the SMS group that came and sang for us in February. They sing this, and they're going to sing the final verse for us. And I thought it would be great to hear that sung by the SMS chorus. As we look at these words, I think you'll see here this young Christian lawyer and the words that he wrote in the fourth verse. So let's listen to that as a children's. Amen. That's a moving tribute to our great country and the verse that he wrote. The British initially agreed to cease hostilities, and within a few weeks, the British and Americans had agreed to end the war, and they met in France to put together the peace treaty. Well, Britain knew that word traveled very slowly in the 1800s, and most of the southern states did not know the war was over. And the British drugged their feet for months in France. They negotiated, and they wouldn't sign. And they were taking advantage of the situation, and I guess they drugged their feet. Their hopes were to pull off one last victory and defeat the United States at the last minute. So the British turned their massive army to the south to invade the United States from the south. And this is a terrifying thing as that Navy sailed to New Orleans. But God wasn't done either. And we'll talk about that next time when we finish this story. I think it's important to know why we stand at attention, why we recite the pledge and sing the Star-Spangled Banner. That flag represents what God has given us and the sacrifice that so many have made, but especially what God has given us. And everyone in that day recognized what that flag stood for. And so I think it's a great tribute to tell the story. Sometimes we don't know the stories that are behind these things. And so I just want to tell that this morning, and we'll finish the War of 1812 next time.